two scared siblings. Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to Two Scared Siblings. Yay. Okay. Yes. So today is actually going to be a much more serious episode. We are covering The Highway of Tears, which corresponds to a series of murders and disappearances dating way back to the 70s and currently ongoing. And this is happening on a highway between BC and Alberta.
A couple highways.
Yeah, yeah, it's a few different highways along British Columbia. Mm-hmm. And one leading into Alberta.
Yeah. So, yeah. Actually, a few of them lead into Alberta.
Oh.
That's what it
really
said.
Yeah,
that's what
I guess it would. Yeah. Highway 16, though, is the notorious one.
Yeah. And then there's also Highway 1, which is the Trans-Canada Highway. And then there's like, I don't know. I have it in my list, so I'll just say it.
Yeah, we'll find out all about that. But there's a lot of info on missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. So we're going to start off with a personal drama story from me, and then we're going to dive into the info that we've gathered and follow up with a bit of personal drama from Andrea just to shake it up. All
and
right.
Our theme for personal dramas today is not really that dramatic.
No.
It's
haunted
weird
rooms.
Weird rooms that have been found.
Yeah, weird rooms in our lives.
Because rooms.
Rooms
say
is
no
the theme.
More.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's
nothing
a classical
is more
draw.
Interesting than a room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. What's his name? Tommy Wiseau would agree. That movie, The Room.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a notoriously bad movie. You might have seen it.
I read the book. I didn't watch the
there
movie.
There was a book?
Yeah, and it was actually good.
What?
Yeah.
I'm shocked. I'm just so surprised.
Not The Room. It's just called Room.
Hmm.
You're talking about the one where the girl was kidnapped, right?
No, I'm not.
Oh.
Nope. No. No, the movie is something completely different, and it is not something that you'd ever...
Is it a horror?
Yeah, it's like a personal drama, but not from our perspective. I think his name's Tommy Wiseau. It's basically a story based on his real life and him talking about how crazy his girlfriend turned out to be. Oh. But it's all like very, very like from his perspective and very melodramatic and strange. That's definitely not the theme of our dramas.
Yeah, and
luckily.
It's also not the book I read.
No, I know which book you're talking about. That
yeah.
That was actually an interesting one, and it's just called Room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That one was good. And they did make a movie, and I didn't watch the movie.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, we should scope that out, and maybe that'll be a future pop culture essay on my half.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, so Rooms.
So you gotta start.
I'm going to start off. Yeah. Because Andrea is covering the first part of this list that we've got. All right, so when I was in junior high, I went to a school that was one of the oldest buildings in Calgary. It was it was both an elementary and a junior high. The junior high was on the upper floors, and this building was absolutely ancient. It was made of like sandstone and marble, and it was absolutely beautiful. It had that old smell to it.
The old wood smell, right?
Yeah, old wood and chalk, and just it smelled old, but in a good way, like in a haunted mansion kind of way. And there was this abandoned bathroom. I'm not sure why it was abandoned, but we all used it anyway. I think it had like two out of order urinals that some people still used. But it was more convenient. It was closer than the other one. So in this abandoned washroom, there was an entryway with some sinks, and it was split into two rooms, the entry room, and in the entry room was this huge staircase or this little winding thing that kind of just went up. Further, like to the vaulted ceiling. And there was a room up there. And this school had been a hospital before. It was a school back in like 1902 or 19 something. It was used in both wars, I believe, both the world wars, as a hospital. Yeah, it was a military hospital for a while. And that room was where they kept all the beds, like all the leftover mattresses and like stained bandages and like war paraphernalia and
that's really
shit.
Cool. So if there's like a bloody mattress.
Oh yeah, no, they would be there. Like I'm sure they laundered it before. Well, actually, I'm not even sure of that. I'm not sure they laundered anything.
They might have just shoved everything up there.
That could be it. Like because it was always locked, right? We weren't allowed in there.
Yeah.
And that was what the teachers kind of let slip was in there. It was all the stuff from when it had been a hospital, like whatever was still left over. Probably some stuff that they couldn't get rid of too, like if there's any historical significance. But it's all in storage now and locked in this mysterious room at the top of a stairwell in the bathroom in my ancient school. And we tried picking the lock several times, but we were also 12 years old, so that didn't work out. We weren't that good at it.
That wasn't one of the classes they taught?
No, shocking. You know what's funny?
That's weird.
Okay, 12 or 13-year-old me, depending on the time of year it was, I actually thought that, oh, yeah, we should release
right
my cat. Yeah. Poor Hazel's meowing at the door. Release the kitty. She made just the most forlorn meow. Oh, that was cute. Oh, right. She's got such a whiny voice. I love it.
She's free.
Okay, thank you for freeing my feline.
You're all right. Welcome.
Yeah, so no, that wasn't one of the courses they took, which shocking, I know, but
because at my school, we learned all of that shit.
Yeah, you would have, right?
Smoking weed 101, picking locks 101.
Smoking weed 101, as opposed to the advanced courses.
Killing a man 101.
Oh, yeah, no. That's a good one.
And that's
yeah
how I got good at that.
Maybe my school's just outdated.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird.
Give it the times.
But yeah, 12 or 13-year-old me or whatever, I thought that there would be books on lockpicking at the library. So I actually went to the library that we used to go to, the one close by, like in Signal Hill, you'll remember. I went there and I walked up to the desk and I was like, do you have books on lockpicking?
Oh my God.
I thought it was a regular question, right? And
I wouldn't be surprised if there were books on lockpicking.
No, and I ended up having to consult the internet, but there were no books on lockpicking, and I think I wasn't put on a list, but the lady looked like she wanted to. yeah, if I'd been older, I might have been. Who knows? But yeah. So yeah, we were never successful at picking this lock, but one of the days, it was just open a crack. It was just like open a slight bit, and I don't remember why we didn't go inside. I think it might have even just been a rumor that it was open, I think, or even a story my friend told me from the year before, because I entered a few years after this school had cropped up. Yeah. I think someone had gone in there once, but I forget what she said about it.
Damn it.
Anyway, there was a whole thing about this room. Yeah, and the teachers would just like have odd faces whenever we'd ask about it, and it was just like forbidden territory. If you were caught hanging out too much at the top of that stairway by the door, they'd kind of nastily ask you to come down, like snap at you to get away from the door.
So there's something secret in there.
Yeah, or there was something dangerous in there. Yeah.
So we really need to know now how to break into a junior high and then pick a lock.
Well, the junior high will let you in. You'd probably just walk in.
Yeah, I could pass for junior high.
No, they just wouldn't question it. This was a very disorganized school. Well, my girlfriend at the time, who was also 12 when I was, she was slightly tall. She got mistaken for a substitute. I think you could do it because the school was so disorganized. It was a new program, right? And I suspect it hasn't really changed much, despite it being like a decade. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, it'd be really interesting to see what's in that room.
I'll have to Google it. Yeah.
And people who are listening, if you've ever found a strange room, email us at twoscaredsiblings@gmail.com.
Yes.
Because we'd like to hear about it.
Yeah, we want to hear all your eerie room tales.
Yeah.
There's got to be some.
Oh, yeah.
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 All right.
So I'll save mine for after.
Yeah.
But also, I have the plague right now. Oh, and where we're sitting around this microphone is like the hot zone.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, since we have to crowd around it, my face is going to be right in Andrea's face.
You're welcome.
I don't want it. No. Oh, great. She always gets me sick. Andrea is a known plague carrier around here.
I am.
Yeah.
I'm patient zero for everything.
Basically. So, yeah.
All right, so now we're getting into some heavy material.
Yeah, so basic warnings.
Stop reading about my paper.
Oh, I'm not. Don't worry. I was just zoning out on it. Basic warnings for, you know, for my half, there's going to be more racial murders, you know, more of the missing and murdered Indigenous women's side. So,
yeah, I was surprised.
Warnings
a lot
without
of,
apply.
A lot of the girls and women that I researched were actually white women.
Yeah, but as time has proceeded, like, along that highway, because there are so many, like, various Indigenous bands and nations, like, it's just become easy to get away with it. But that's more the political side, and that's more in my half. So general warnings for Andrea's half, which we're going to start with now, because we're going from earliest date to latest date.
Yeah,
that's
so I'll be
been
starting.
Recorded. So Andrea will be starting. And yeah.
Okay, well,
all
here
right,
we go.
Go ahead, Andrea.
All right, so it actually dates back to the 60s, just barely. So the first one is named, the first woman who was killed along this Highway of Tears, what is Gloria Moody. She was 26 years old. She was Indigenous, and she was a mother of two on a weekend trip with her family. She was last seen on October 25th, 1969, leaving a bar in Williams Lake, BC, British Columbia, Canada.
Yeah.
Her brother had taken her to several bars that night, including the Lakeview, the Maple Leaf, and Ranch Hotel. When leaving the Ranch Hotel, Gloria's brother thought she was right behind him and states he doesn't know what happened after that.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is weird.
Yeah.
If she was right behind him. But, you know.
It can happen.
I'm picturing this place as like a pretty rural
bar.
Although I don't know that, but yeah.
Right. But it could have been, yeah.
Yeah. So they might have been like walking along the highway and and then she just was gone.
Yikes.
On October 26, 1969, which is a day later, her body was found 10 kilometers from Williams Lake on a cattle trail by two hunters. She had been stripped naked, sexually assaulted, beaten, and she bled to death from her injuries. The three unnamed main suspects police had in this case are now deceased. And I don't know why they aren't named.
So they're not named online in your research, hey?
No.
Weird.
And they actually specified that they're unnamed.
Hmm.
Yeah. There are rumors as to who was involved, but no one has actually come forward. So they're, like, her murder remains unsolved. So they're basically what it is the community talking about who was involved, right? The community starting kind of rumors about who they think did it.
Which would make sense. Some of these communities are, like, close-knit enough that people would find out who did this sort of thing, especially in, like, the 60s, right?
Yeah. They'd be like, oh, it's fucking Creepy Tom.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah, it's
but Creepy Tom has not come forward.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no.
Her now adult daughter has reported that much of the family and community still suffer the trauma of what happened.
Well, yeah.
Obviously, because it was a small community, right? So, and it was traumatic to know
traumatic.
That happened to one of them.
Yeah.
Gloria's case is considered the first murder along what has been called the Highway of Tears. Mm. 18 girls and women have been murdered or disappeared along three major highways leading out of British Columbia and into Alberta, which are Highway 16, 97, and 5, but also Highway 1, which is the Trans-Canada Highway.
Yeah, which runs between Alberta and British Columbia.
Yeah. Well, the Trans-Canada Highway goes
all
the way across
Canada. But this is on the western coast that the Highway of Tears is known for.
Yeah. Her body was found off of Highway 97.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the women on the Highway of Tears were involved in risky behavior, such as sex trafficking or hitchhiking. Not that that is...
Yeah, a lot of people are involved in that behavior and don't get murdered.
Well, back in the 60s and 70s, hitchhiking was common.
Yeah, it would be.
And I mean, I guess if you're a sex worker, you're probably more likely to be, you know, get, on the side of a road trying to, you know,
that's
do your job.
Yeah, exactly.
But I wouldn't say that. I mean, back then, hitchhiking, I don't think, was even considered that much of a risky behavior.
No, not it wouldn't have been back then, no.
And I don't think it really mattered.
No,
if you were a sex worker or not.
No. Considering the history that's led people into having to go into these lines of work to, like, not starve to death, especially. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a lot of the girls on my list weren't even in sex work, so.
Me too.
I mean, they were just, it's whoever's convenient. A woman alone on a highway hitchhiking.
Yeah, and for whatever reason, these highways, particularly 16 in more recent times, it's been brutal.
Yeah.
It's been infamous for this.
So most of the women were of indigenous descent.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I could tell, and honestly, because most of mine occur between like 1969 and then maybe like 1980s, there's not a lot of information, and from what I could tell, only a couple of mine were indigenous, a couple of my list here.
And I did the more recent ones.
Yeah,
and
we both did nine
all,
women.
Yes, we each did nine. Andrea did the first half, I did the latter. And in more recent times, like starting from the 90s and late 80s onward, it's been, you know, the murders and missing women are primarily indigenous. Yeah,
but I think that that's probably because maybe back then, missing and murdered indigenous women weren't reported as much as
well,
they are now.
They're having a heck of a time getting the Canadian government and the police force to take this seriously now.
Yeah,
like,
well,
it's just coming to light
now. They're
still
underreported now.
Yeah, so can you even imagine back in the 60s? Like, it's terrible now, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so that's it. That's all I could get.
For Gloria.
For Gloria, yeah. My job was a lot harder than yours, Ren.
I've got a lot more info, yes.
I had to dig deep for this, what information I have here.
Good. It's information worth having.
So the next one is Micheline Paré, or Paré.
Mm-hmm.
Micheline was last seen in July 1970 along Fort St. John / Hudson's Hope Highway. I don't know which one that is, but it's probably one of those three.
Yeah.
Her body was found August 8th, 1970, near Hudson's Hope. She was 18.
Oh.
According to police reports, two women in a car had dropped Micheline off at the gates of Tompkins Ranch on Highway 20 between Fort St. John and Hudson's Hope. She had been hitchhiking, which was a common method of traveling in those days.
Mm-hmm.
On August 8th, her body was found 21 kilometers away by a group of people picking Saskatoon berries beside the highway. Micheline, who came from Quebec, had been beaten with a blunt weapon. Officers believed she had been sexually attacked, although decomposition made it difficult to be certain.
Right.
Police trying to generate tips circulated a photo of her throughout BC along with this description. She was 5'4" with brown hair and a dimple in her chin and was wearing blue flare cords.
Okay.
And then,
1970, yeah.
Yeah. And then news about her case soon fell silent, as it did for a lot of these victims, because when they can't figure it out,
They drop it.
Yeah. The next one is Gail Ways. So Gail Ann Ways disappeared on October 19th, 1973. So you see like a pattern.
Like these first
them,
three are close together.
Yeah, actually they're all really close.
Okay, so.
With the exception, I think, of like my last one. But so she disappeared October 19th, 1973. Police believe she left the service station where she worked in Clearwater at about 9:30 p.m. to hitchhike back to her parents' house in Kamloops. The night she disappeared, she was asking around for someone to drive her to Kamloops, but no one was heading that way, so she just walked outside and stuck out her thumb.
Okay, yeah.
Back in
the 70s, yeah.
Yeah. Her nude, decomposed body was found nearly a year later on April 6, 1974, just off Highway 5, in a water-filled ditch 11 kilometers south of Clearwater. At the time of her killing, she was described as a wholesome girl who taught Girl Guides and wasn't into drugs.
Wow.
So she wasn't really a risky...
Yeah, so if this was one
risk,
person, it wasn't. Yeah. They weren't just targeting high risk. Like, they weren't
really,
just targeting
it's just
sex
hitchhiking.
Workers.
Hitchhiking
yeah, it's whoever's
is the risky
there.
Behavior.
Yeah, and they wouldn't have necessarily known or had a choice.
No. So. Yeah, well, she's trying to go see her parents, right?
Oh, this poor girl.
I know. Investigators suspect violent offender Bobby Jack Fowler.
Well, fuck Bobby.
He died in 2006 behind bars.
Good. If he did it, that is, hopefully.
Yeah.
He wasn't the wrong guy.
He was a serial killer.
So oh, okay. So
he comes up a couple times here.
He deserves this regardless, yeah.
So DNA has linked him to one Highway of Tears victim already, and he's also suspect in the death of another 19-year-old. Oh. Yeah. But they suspect him in a couple, so I'll keep going.
I'm glad he's dead.
Yeah. But, yeah.
It was too late for these girls.
It would be nice if they'd gotten answers before he died.
Yeah,
is what I'm thinking, you know?
It'd be nice if police forces worked.
Yeah. So, Pamela Darlington is the next one. On November 6, 1973, a 17-year-old man was walking with his dog when his dog ran up to a body. Yeah.
Oh.
And so he called the cops.
Well, that would be traumatic.
Yeah. She was 19 years old. Her partly clothed, badly beaten body was fished out of the Thompson River the next day, and a train crew reported sighting a man with messy blonde hair near the scene of the crime. But that vague description didn't leave detectives anywhere.
Yeah, it wouldn't, yeah.
No. So she's also believed to have been killed by Bobby Jack Fowler.
Okay.
And his main method of murdering it was strangulation, from what I could see.
Right.
Like, and from
sexual
what I...
assault.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Great.
The next lady is Colleen McMillan. In 1974, so you see, like, they're all, like, 73, 74 at the beginning here,
so this would
much.
Make sense for it to be
this
guy. Yeah.
So in 1974, Colleen McMillan, who was 16, was living with her family along the lake at Lac La Hache.
Mm-hmm.
She had decided to hitchhike into Lac La Hache to spend the night with a friend, but she never arrived. Her body was found near a logging road south of 100 Mile House.
Right.
46 kilometers south of where she was last seen. Bobby Jack Fowler was working as a roofer in the area at the time of the murder, and DNA found on her blouse was matched to Fowler.
Okay. Yeah. So he's looking pretty good for these murders.
Yeah.
In this point in time, like at this point in time.
Yeah. Then there's Monica Ignis. So on December 13th, 1974, Badier.
Yeah.
Monica Ignis was last seen walking by herself along Highway 16. She was walking toward her home in Thornhill. Her body was found 4 months later in a heavily wooded area east of Terrace.
Right.
And she had been strangled to death.
Yeah.
She was 14 years old.
Oh, that's very similar to one of the cases I'm going to cover, but wow. This poor kid.
I know. So two witnesses reported seeing a car pulled over to the side of the road the night she vanished. The pair saw a man and a passenger who looked like a girl inside the vehicle. Monica had been wearing a blue wool duffel coat with wooden toggles for buttons and brown wallaby-style shoes. And she was also wearing blue socks with the shoes, but only one sock was found at the crime scene.
I don't know either.
Maybe he
but
keeps
this,
socks.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know who this
could be.
They didn't like seem to suspect Bobby Jack Fowler in this one, so.
Weird. Why not?
I don't know.
Well.
They could only connect him to a couple of them, and they only suspect him in a couple of them. So it must be something maybe slightly different in MO, or maybe it's the highway.
Or but, they just couldn't prove it, and they think it was him. Like.
Yeah. I can't remember exactly what was stated. Bobby Jack Fowler traveled around, like, he kind of went around murdering throughout BC, but also, like, northern states, northwestern states, and then maybe Alberta, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great.
So, the next poor, like, girl.
They're so young, too.
Well, this next one is pretty bad, too.
Oh, boy.
Monica Jack. So, on a spring day in 1978... 12-year-old Monica Jack and her 14-year-old cousin Debbie John went on a bike ride into the nearby town of Merritt to go shopping.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first time Monica's mother had given her permission to bike that far.
Oh, boy.
It was 12 kilometers along Highway 5A from Monica's Nicole Lake home to Debbie's house in Nicole.
Right.
So she biked that 12 kilometers to go get Debbie.
Wow.
And then
that's
the two,
impressive.
Yeah. And then the two rode together another 10 kilometers into Merritt, which is a city in BC's interior. Monica bought new shoes and a birthday gift for her younger sister. Aww. And then the two parted ways close to Debbie's house. And Debbie went home, and then Monica headed for her home, but yeah. She never arrived, and her body wasn't found until 1996.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So now, more than three decades later, Gary Taylor Handlin has been charged with her murder, as well as the murder of another girl. At the time of the murders, he had just been released from prison for the rape of an 18-year-old housewife.
Ugh.
And his M.O. is strangling. So maybe his M.O. is strangling.
Well, it's...
And Bobby Jack Fowler's might have been something else. I don't know.
Well, and strangling is just how a lot of people
Yeah, it's pretty
do it.
Common.
So it could be
Especially
anyone,
with
too.
Rapists, I find.
Yeah, because it's an intimacy and power thing.
Yeah. So this guy was clearly like... Sorry, my leg's falling asleep.
No worries.
This guy was a rapist, and he had just been released from prison for raping somebody.
So they think that's what happened to Monica?
Yeah. Yeah, they think he probably raped her and then killed her.
Oh, God.
He didn't kill the other person, but he killed her. Yeah. So the next one is Maureen Mosey. She was last seen alive in Salmon Arm, apparently hitchhiking on May 8th, 1981. Okay, I have 1982. I have five digits in this year. I'm pretty sure I meant 1981, though.
Yeah, you kind of screwed the pooch on that one. Okay.
Yeah, 1981.
All right.
She lived in Edson, Alberta, and so it's possible she was heading there, but it's believed she was actually hitchhiking to Kamloops.
Right.
The next day, her body was located south of the intersection of Highway 97 and Highway 1.
Right.
Which we are familiar with.
Yeah.
Beaten to death. She was seen getting into a car in Salmon Arm a day before her body was discovered, and the man was described as in his late 20s or early 30s with black or brown hair and a beard.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, and that's another, like, it's hard with these descriptions because these guys just, they could
it
be
could
anybody.
Could be anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then my last one is Shelly Ann Baskew. She was 16.
Again.
And was last seen walking along Highway 16 in the direction of her home in Hinton in 1983. She had been babysitting with her boyfriend in Hinton's Sunset Mobile Home Park, now called the Hillcrest Mobile Estates. She phoned her mother and asked her to cook her some noodles and said she'd be home in about 15 minutes. Yeah, her body has never been found, but several days after her disappearance, her school books and some clothing of hers were found near the Athabasca River.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So they'll never know.
No. Like, that was,
Wow.
It's 35 years ago-ish.
Yeah, it's been some time.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem that I'll be getting into in my half, too. I have a quote from a retired RCMP officer regarding that. So I will be doing the more recent missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And there's one white victim as well, but the majority of these cases are against Indigenous women. So it's going to be very serious. And if this is something that's difficult for you to listen to, maybe tune out now. All right. So
we left off at 1983 with my last victim.
Yep. And this one is 1989. You know, a gap, a little bit of a gap. All right. So Alberta Gail Williams from CBC News Canada. Alberta Gail Williams, 24, was living with her sister in a downtown Vancouver apartment when they decided to take a break from city life and try out seasonal work in northern British Columbia for the summer. On September 25th, 1989, her body was found on the outskirts of Prince Rupert, BC, about 37 kilometers or 23 miles east of Prince Rupert near the Tyee Overpass. She had been strangled and sexually assaulted, similar to
the, all of mine.
Yeah, all of
all
yours.
All of them. Yeah.
Yeah. In 2006, her death was added to Project EPANA, the police task force that investigates disappearances and murders along BC's Highway of Tears. In 2016, her story was part of an 8-episode CBC podcast called Missing and Murdered by Connie Walker. I recommend listening to it if you can find it. The podcast helped uncover new information that was never used by the RCMP, including a witness who is never interviewed by the police. In July 2017, Alberta's brother, Francis Williams, created a memorial cross where her body was found in 1989 in hopes that it will help someone come forward.
That's
recent that he erected this memorial cross.
And this podcast is awesome because that just, like, brings to light how current technology and stuff can help figure
really
some stuff, like capture those people
that
were never interviewed by police. Because
the internet has helped massively with this.
Yeah.
Yes. Almost 30 years ago, Claudia Williams buried her youngest sister, Alberta Williams. She would have been double that age now, and family are still no closer to finding out what happened to Alberta. And this is in quotes from Claudia. "She would have had her own family now. She would have been living her life," Claudia said of her sister. "But her life was taken so suddenly like that. I believe that everybody has a time to go, but not when it's like that." Alberta Williams was from the Gitanyo, or Gitanyo, band in British Columbia.
That's sad.
Yeah, that's
brutal. And you have to think, like, the police, like, the reason that all these witnesses get missed is because, law enforcement have so many cases, right?
Yeah.
This is just, like, one
of... They shelve things.
Yeah, but this is, like, just one... That's the thing. Like, it's not all their fault because they are thrown cases. Like, cases are just thrown at them.
Yeah.
And so
problem
they can't,
is often...
like, focus on one case.
No, they can't.
All the time.
No, for sure. The problem with when it's typically with Indigenous women and girls is that the investigations are not prioritized. So it can be a bit difficult with that one, right? Like, it's hard to say if they were really trying or if they weren't. And people have differing stances on that. So the next one, Delphine Nicale from the Missing Children Society of Canada. On June 13th, 1990, Delphine Nicale was left in the care of her uncle. At approximately 2 o'clock p.m., Delphine advised her uncle she was going to meet her three girlfriends in Smithers, B.C., approximately 16 kilometers away. Delphine hitchhiked to Smithers and met up with her friends. At approximately 10 p.m., Delphine called her uncle to tell him that she was on her way home from Smithers. She was last seen by her two friends hitchhiking in the eastbound lane of Highway 16. From justicefornativewomen.com, another place I'd advise looking at, they've got a lot of great information. Delphine was 15 years old when she vanished from Smithers, British Columbia, on June 13, 1990. She was last seen hitchhiking along Highway 16 and King Street on her way home to Telqua, BC. Delphine's case is one of the confirmed 19 cases authorities consider part of the Highway of Tears. Since 1969, 19 women have gone missing along Highway 16 along British Columbia's east-west corridor. The area is largely poor and lacking for transportation, forcing people to use hitchhiking as a means of getting around. While 19 are confirmed victims, Aboriginal communities in the area say victims could be in the 40s. 13 of the 19 victims were women of Aboriginal descent. One of the other victims was Cecilia Nicole, cousin to Delphine, who disappeared approximately a year prior to Delphine. No arrests have been made or suspects announced in Delphine's case, and she remains missing. So yeah, her cousin actually disappeared similarly a year before her.
Great.
Can you imagine what that's like for the family?
That would be devastating.
Yeah. All right, Ramona Wilson. Ramona Wilson was 16 years old when her family last saw her at home in Smithers, British Columbia, on June 11, 1994. A missing persons investigation was launched 2 days later when Ramona's mother called the Smithers RCMP. On April 9th, 1995, a local found the teenager's body in a wooded area west of the Smithers Airport. Ramona's case is now under Project EPANA, a task force dedicated to unsolved murders with links to Highway 16 between Prince George and Prince Rupert, otherwise known as the Highway of Tears in British Columbia. She was hitchhiking from Smithers to attend a dance and stay with friends in Hazelton, BC on June 1st, 1994. And Ramona's remains were found April 1995 north of Yellick Road near Smithers Airport, or Yellich Road, not sure. Several items were in a small organized pile a few feet away. Other objects nearby included a half-buried small section of rope, three interlocking nylon ties, and a small pink brass knuckles-type water pistol. Matilda Wilson spent many midnights with her youngest daughter, Ramona. "She used to jump in my bed because she had a nightmare or something, and then we'd talk into the night," she said, remembering her popular phrase, "Oh, Ramona, you have to go to sleep now because it's school tomorrow." The Gitsan teenager had five older siblings, and Matilda called her sweetheart baby, even though she was born a day after Valentine's Day. Matilda loved lending an ear to her daughter's vast collection of poetry, and Ramona would confide in her mom and ask for advice during troubling times at school. As Ramona worked her way through those rough patches, she left her bad dreams behind her.
Oh.
I know.
That's so sad.
I know. It was hard researching these. All right. Roxanne Thiara from Wikipedia. Roxanne went missing in Prince George on the July long weekend in 1994. She had worked as a prostitute and told a friend she was going out with a customer. She walked around the corner of a building and was never heard from again. Her body was found August 17th, 1994, in the bush along Highway 16, 6 kilometers or 3.7 miles east of Burns Lake. According to some sources, she knew victim Alicia Germain, who's coming up, from justicefornativewomen.com. Roxanne was 15 years old when she disappeared from Prince George, BC, over the long weekend in July of 1994. Her remains were found along Highway 16 off of Burns Lake about a month later. Roxanne was in foster care and had run away to Prince George. She engaged in survival sex, a form of sex trafficking, in order to meet her needs alone. Her friends remember her saying she was going out with a customer on the night of her disappearance. Roxanne is one of the 19 cases that authorities consider a part of the Highway of Tears murders. Roxanne's case remains unsolved. Roxanne is described as a happy, beautiful, outgoing person. May she rest in peace and may justice find her.
So was she found? Oh, no, her remains
were found.
Her body
was found. The mystery was never... Her case remains unsolved.
Okay.
So, yeah, she was killed, but... they don't know anything about it. All right, so Alicia Leah Germain. According to missingpeople.net, a few months after Roxanne Thiara was found, on December 9th, three teenaged boys found 15-year-old Alicia Germain dead of multiple stab wounds behind an elementary school, Haldy Road Elementary School, off of Highway 16 West, according to Wikipedia, in Prince George. Germain, part native, had worked previously as a prostitute, but friends claimed she stopped work 2 weeks before her death. According to some sources, she knew victim Roxanne Thiara. The night she was murdered, she attended a dinner for kids on the street at a Native Friendship Center. She left sometime between 7 and 8 p.m. and was last seen in the downtown area between 9 and 10 p.m. Her fully clothed body was discovered about 11:15 p.m. There was no evidence of sexual assault. The RCMP investigation into the deaths of Alicia Germain and other women who went missing or are found murdered along this highway is called Project EPANA. Yep, to reiterate. Yeah. Yep. That's another site to check out for sure. Lana Derrick, from an article from theprovince.com published in 2014. Sally Gibson has been waiting nearly two decades for answers about what became of her niece, a 19-year-old forestry student from a small First Nation in northern British Columbia who vanished along the Highway of Tears. There's the official story. Lana Derrick was out with some friends and at some point ended up in a car with two unidentified men with whom she was last seen at a gas station along Highway 16 near Terrace in the early morning of October 7th, 1995. But that's just one of the many theories, rumors, and guesses Gibson and her relatives have heard over the years. A painful reminder that no one, not the family, not the police, has any idea about what happened. Here's a quote from her. We have heard so many different stories and have been told so many different things that we don't even know, said Gibson from her home in Gitinyo, the First Nations reserve where Derek grew up. It isn't like Lana died and we went and buried her and the pain will go away. She totally disappeared. That's an open wound. Nicole Hoare. Nicole Hoare was last seen hitchhiking to Smithers. Originally from Red Deer, Alberta, Nicole was last seen at a gas station at 5952 Gautier Road, west of Prince George, on June 21st, 2002, at approximately 2:50 p.m., talking to a 20 to 35-year-old white man in an orange car. From online site The Canadian Encyclopedia, Nicole was from Alberta and working in the Prince George, BC area as a tree planter. Nicole was 25 years old at the time of her disappearance. From globalnews.ca, the driver, described as a white male, was wearing a short-sleeved white t-shirt. When she went missing, Nicole was carrying a green shoulder bag with a blue patch and an orange dragon on it. She was also carrying a black and purple backpack from Mountain Equipment Co-op. Nicole was wearing wire-rimmed octagonal glasses, greenish-brown capri pants, and a red long-sleeved t-shirt. An article published by the Calgary Herald in 2014 talks about Leland Switzer, a killer serving a life sentence for the murder of his brother, who has been a person of interest in Nicole's disappearance. In the same article, Ray Michalko, a retired Mountie turned private investigator who began looking into the Highway of Tears murders in 2006, says the biggest obstacle is the passage of time. Witnesses have died, other people who know things, who knows where they are now.
Yeah, that's so the problem when it's old, right?
Yeah, that's one of the huge problems. Like,
Now
that this is finally getting publicity and people are looking into this, like, they don't know where their witnesses even would be. Like,
yeah, like it's something that would need to be done right at the moment.
Right? Yeah, right then and there. Yeah. And it just wasn't. Tamara Lynn Chipman from CBC News. Tamara Chipman, 22, grew up on her father's fishing boat and loved the outdoors. She was mother to one young boy when she vanished from an area near Prince Rupert, BC, on September 21st, 2005. Yikes, here's more about Project EPANA, which is the task force dedicated to this. When Tamara went missing, volunteers from Morristown First Nation, Tamara's home community, organized a search for her. She was last seen hitchhiking at Industrial Park just outside of Prince Rupert, BC, said Gladys Redeck, Tamara's aunt. They sent a search party in between Terrace and Prince Rupert. Redeck doesn't know if police conducted any searches of their own, and Redeck dislikes what she calls dismissive labels that have been applied to her niece, who is a member of the Wet'suwet'en Nation and grew up in Terrace, British Columbia. She says, "There is a lot of stuff I've seen online, such derogatory stuff."
What?
There's like a lot about her being called a sex worker and, like, the way they phrased her risky behaviors. They basically just made her out to sound, you know, like, well, she's just the kind of girl this thing happens to, right? Mm. And it was just, it's just very callous.
There's a lot of that victim shaming.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
So she's missing, but not, she hasn't been found dead?
No, they just don't know. And apparently they're not even sure if the police, like, checked, but it's hard to say. You would think they would have told you if they had, but, yeah. So, Ayla Sarah Gauger from Global News Canada. On the evening of February 2nd, 2006, 14-year-old Ayla Sarah Gauger said goodbye to her mother. That goodbye would be the last. After going to the mall with her brother and sister, Ayla went to a friend's house for a sleepover. She enjoyed an everyday part of growing up, except her sleepover ended in tragedy. Overnight, she was spotted walking north in the 2100 block Quince Street. Video surveillance shows Ayla walking towards her home and passing the Save on Foods gas bar at 1600 15th Avenue at around 1 a.m. Her family plastered missing posters all over downtown Prince George. Tragically, 8 days after her sleepover, her body was found in a ditch off Highway 16, infamously known as the Highway of Tears. At just 14 years old, Ayla is the second youngest of the known victims along the Highway of Tears. Her murder remains unsolved. Yep. Oh, and this is a little aside for that, from justicefornativewomen.com. If you have any information regarding the disappearance or whereabouts of Delphine Nicole and the other girls, you are encouraged to contact the RCMP at 250-847-3233. And this also applies to any of the still missing women and girls on our list and families and communities of the victims. More specific information on the missing women and girls' physical appearances, belongings, and missing statuses can be found at a variety of websites, including justicefornativewomen.com, doenetwork.org, that's D-O-E network.org, and Missing Children Society of Canada. And I'm going to link more information on these cases. I've got a few websites here, and also some websites where you can donate and contribute to missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls organizations, communities, and campaigns. So those will be linked in the descriptions of our video.
Yeah, that's a good place to put it, because then people...
Yeah, well, these aren't really... Yeah, and these aren't readable ones. They're... they're coded, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're specific. So there are ways that you can get in touch and help if you've got the ability to.
I'm glad there's more information now on all of the victims. Like, there's really...
Barely anything in your half, hey?
Barely anything, because they're so old. And I think back then they had probably a harder time keeping track. Like, they didn't have all the... Well, obviously, I don't think that whenever... When was the task force made? Like, it was...
EPANA?
Yeah.
I think might have been 2006. Well, that's when Alberta Gail Williams was added to Project EPANA. But I'm not actually sure when it started.
Yeah, like, I don't think that it was a thing, obviously, with my girls.
No, I don't think it was a thing back then. Yeah, no, I don't think it was happening in the 70s.
It wouldn't have been termed the Highway of Tears quite yet.
No. And the case would have looked different, because it looked for the first half of the 70s, right? Like that serial killer.
Yeah.
Mainly targeting any woman along that area.
Those two serial killers.
Yeah. And since those were their areas where they like to go, that's probably what it was written off as. Yeah. And then the Highway of Tears just turned into something else completely. Now it's like cursed for the people who live around there.
Yeah.
And there's so many cases. Yeah. And missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, that's still ongoing. Like, that's a huge thing in Canada.
And there are way more than that.
There are way more. Yeah.
I don't know what
this... There are even more recent cases. Yeah.
I don't know what this official list is, you know, like what the qualifications are for making this official 18-girl list, but there are clearly way more women that have gone disappearing along the Highway of Tears.
Yeah, I think there is more information about how they become classified as a Highway of Tears victim.
I'm sure there is, yeah.
I think I ran across it, but it's on one of the websites I link. But
yeah, so if you want, you can look at it.
Definitely check out like the contribution links, because this is such an ongoing issue in Canada.
It's likely that it's, you know, a bunch of different killers, right?
Oh, yeah. In this case, I think just because they can get away with it and it's in the area.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, be sure to check out those links. And now Andrea is going to finish off with a change of topic, because it's this difficult one for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And she's going to share her drama about her own eerie room.
Yeah, so my eerie room actually was in our house.
Yeah, I don't remember this. I was an itty bitty back then.
Yeah, you were like 1 year old. Oh. And actually at this point you might not have been born. Well, obviously, no, I would have found the room before you were born.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because I was like... Born in that house, technically, right? Like,
yeah, you were there since infancy.
Yeah, so there was this weird little room. So we had an old, like, 70s house.
Yeah.
And it had, like, one of those milk deposit doors. what are they called?
Yeah, I don't know, but you know.
Milk box? I'm not sure.
You know
sure.
How back doors used to have, like, this little, where the milkman
milk
would drop off.
The milk.
Yeah.
And then you can open the door from your side and, like... Take the milk.
Yeah, that's cute.
And then we also had like a cold room at the bottom of our stairs to our basement, which was actually like a cold room. So I called it the pantry, but it actually was made in such a way that it was like
an indoor cellar.
A cold room, like an indoor cold room. Yeah. Anyway, so then we also had this laundry chute that went from our bathroom, and like you just went in the bathroom, shoved your dirty clothes down this laundry chute, and like they ended up on the floor in the basement in the laundry room. Yeah. So it was a dated house. And the room, though, I think was in the back of the laundry room. And so you went to the very back of the laundry room and you turn left. And there was, like, this kind of little door. And in it was, like, wallpapered, like, as if it was a kid's room.
Which is eerie.
Yeah, and it, but it was tiny, like the size of a closet.
Yeah. Like, you couldn't fit a bed in there. Why was it wallpapered specifically?
Yeah, like, you wouldn't be able to fit a bed in there. It was too small. It was literally a closet, but it was wallpapered.
Yeah.
And it looked like a place, like somebody had put their kid.
Yeah, you were saying, didn't you find, like, toys in there or something?
I found, like, little knickknacks. Honestly, I think it... I don't remember exactly what the knickknacks were, but I kind of feel like they were, like, little religious statue thingies.
What?
Yeah, like a little metal... Like, I think I might have found a rosary in there. And I also found, I think, what... Like, a little... You know, a little metal... Like an inch high, statuette sort of thing, like of like Mother Mary or something,
right? Like a traditional like Catholic or Christian.
Yeah,
figure.
I just remember having that impression because I was like five at the time, so
it's hard
I don't
to
remember
say,
exactly.
Probably. It could have been though. Maybe this was where they like threw their children in and forced them to pray.
Yeah, it might have been a little prayer room, or it might be what you said.
Yeah, it seems serial killer-y
kind of
to
like
me, or like
Carrie's
bad
mother.
Yeah, that's the impression I get. Yikes. Yeah. Do you remember who sold? I mean, you probably wouldn't. Did Mom ever mention who she bought this place from? Like,
no.
Okay. Yeah.
I wouldn't know either.
We should ask her about it, see if she like remembers.
Yeah, it was a weird little room.
Yeah,
and it was creepy.
The fact that it's wallpapered specifically, like, it'd be one thing if it was painted to be a cheery color, but wallpapering it to look like a kid's bedroom is really weird for a closet.
Yeah.
You don't
it
usually
was really
do that.
Strange.
Yeah.
No. And it's not like it was big enough to put a bed in there, which I guess is, like, partially reassuring.
Yeah, I guess.
Because obviously they wouldn't be, but I mean, you know.
Yeah, because there were two other kids' rooms, right? Like, rooms that could be.
Yeah. Yeah. There were rooms upstairs.
Yeah, so this closet was not really necessary as a room.
No,
but
I don't
like
understand
it. It was being used as some sort of, like, living space. Not necessarily, but.
It was being used for something,
it was being
for sure.
used for something besides storage, yeah.
Yeah.
Weird.
And I think it was technically under the stairs. It was weird.
A little Harry Potter situation.
Like, yeah, Harry Potter.
Yeah, we've got a Harry Potter problem going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Well, yikes. Okay, I wish I'd seen that.
I know.
Too little. Yeah.
Yeah.
We moved out of that house when I was like one or two.
I wish I'd been more curious about it. But at the time, I was just like, little room. Like,
yeah.
I liked it because I was like, this is cool. It's like a little tiny play place. Like, I didn't hang out in there. It was too small to play in.
Wow.
But it was cool to, like, go in and explore.
Yeah, I probably would have liked
to do
that,
too. Not that there was much to explore.
No, but it's just an interesting little hiding spot for kids to find.
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of cool.
Yeah.
This is the same basement that Rattle Me Bones went off in.
Was it?
Yeah.
Ah.
It wasn't in that room.
Oh, maybe it was haunted.
That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird.
Somebody shoved their kid in a little prayer closet, and the kid died and then turned on my Rattle Me Bones toy.
Well, I would be bored if the only thing I had to play with was also an abandoned rosary, so I think that's fair, actually. I mean,
there's
only so many hours of fun you can have praying.
What? Endless hours of fun you can have with a rosary.
Well, yeah, it depends on what you're into. Yep.
I had a glow-in-the-dark rosary.
Yeah, no, Mom passed that on to me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think she still has it.
Okay, so this is how good of a Catholic I am. I put it around my neck.
Oh, yeah. That actually went in style.
I didn't know that you weren't supposed to do that.
No, most people don't. In, like, 2008, 2007, like, between 2006 and 2009, it was actually in fashion.
Mm.
So you'd go through the mall,
and there'd be
necklace rosaries being sold at, like, Guess.
That's weird because that's technically like
they
heresy.
Stopped. Yeah, it is. They stopped, but obviously people had no clue and they thought it was kind of a cool, edgy.
Well, everybody knew when I was in school and I put it around my neck, people were looking at me weird. And then one little boy, this is like grade six, one boy came up to me. He's like, "You're not supposed to wear that. It's disrespectful."
Yeah. I wouldn't have known either. Yeah.
No.
I never had
and
the urge
how?
To wear it. But
we grew up in a religious Irish Catholic family and nobody
thought
to tell me I couldn't put the rosary on it. It's a necklace. It's a necklace.
That's what it looks like to a kid especially because it would fit and everything.
Oh.
But yeah, no. So those are our tales of room-related woe.
Yeah.
Yep.
There you go.
All right. So Yeah. Again, links are in the description. And again, you should send us your stories about anything.
Yep. And there's a Facebook group now, too. You can join.
Oh, yes. There's
I made a Facebook group. It's okay. Just called Two Scared Siblings.
All right. So, yeah, the Gmail, if you want to send us anything to do with the cases or rooms or just the normal stuff, the normal eerie shit, it's twoscaredsiblings@gmail.com. And our Facebook page is just Two Scared Siblings.
Yeah. And we're also on Instagram and Twitter, I think, right?
Yep. We're on Instagram and Twitter. Instagram doesn't have much going up, but we'll probably take more pictures of us working and other eerie things we discover.
Some stuff going. Yeah.
Yeah. You know where to find us.
Yeah.
And it's not in a wallpapered room. Yeah. Get involved. It'll be fun. All right.
Okay.
So, bye.
Bye.